This is the Preparedness Radio Network, preparing you for natural and man-made disasters, helpful tips on gardening and homesteading. Be prepared, and remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network. Did you know that there were more natural disasters in 2011 than any other year in recorded history? So far, 2012 is on track to beat this record with even more earthquakes, tornadoes, and floods. When disasters and hyperinflation happens, grocery store shelves go empty. People are left without food and are forced to rely on the government. Don't let this happen to you. BuyEmergencyFoods.com offers delicious, ready-made meals from Legacy Premium Food Storage at the best prices available anywhere. Don't be fooled by the more expensive, less convenient, and poorly packaged emergency food storage options out there. Legacy Premium Food Storage meals are vegetarian friendly, taste delicious, and are ready to eat in just minutes. With premium ingredients made in the USA, plus all of these great tasting emergency meals come with a worry-free 25-year shelf life. So if you're worried about food inflation, economic crisis, unemployment, or natural disasters, then don't delay and prepare your family now. Order today and use the promo code E2E and get free shipping and 5% off on every item. Again, go to buyemergencyfoods.com and get prepared today.
Hey, old Dr. Bones here. Are you prepared to deal with medical issues in a disaster situation? What would you do if medical help was not on the way? The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook is over 400 pages of how-to advice written in plain English. You'll learn to handle all the likely medical issues you'll encounter in times of trouble. And it's not just a conventional medical wisdom. We talk about alternatives like essential oils, medicinal herbs, and other home remedies. Make the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook a part of your survival library. And don't forget, Nurse Amy and I have medical kits, suture materials, instructional DVDs, and other items that'll help you keep it together even if things fall apart. Check them out, as well as 200 articles on medical preparedness, survival gardening, and other alternative remedies on our website at www.doomandbloom.net. Never think doom and gloom, think doom and bloom.
Survival is not about the end of the world. It's not about a hypothetical plane crash or the latest violent storm. Survival is about the satisfaction of knowing you can take care of yourself and your family in any situation, anytime, anywhere. CampingSurvival.com was started in 1956. No, not the .com part, the survival part. CampingSurvival.com has over 17,000 urban, wilderness, and preparedness items, supreme customer service, very low shipping, and no games. We look around to make sure we have the lowest prices. And CampingSurvival.com is 100% USMC veteran-owned. Don't base your survival on the latest spring-up-on-the-internet company. Do business with an authority on survival. CampingSurvival.com. Confidence born on preparation. Order today and use the promo code E2E for an additional 5% off your order.
It's the 21st century, a dangerous world. Preppers need food and medicine. Why not have the best? Enterfood.com does the shopping, prep, and packaging for you using the best organic ingredients on the planet. Right now, specials are available for listeners of this station. The all-organic vegetarian food storage pail and the herbal medicine cabinet. The pail holds up to 120 flavorful meals, super packed fresh to last up to 15 years, soaked, cooked, or raw. The herbal medicine cabinet holds everything you'll need to cure common ailments. Use these items in an emergency or use them when camping. You can't beat these prices. Call to order now, 866-762-9238, 866-762-9238, or go to enterfood.com. That's E-N-E-R-F-O-O-D.com, enterfood.com.
BHM Radio is on the air on the Preparedness Radio Network. BHM Radio is the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine, expanding the stories you love in print live across the net. And now, your hosts for BHM Radio, Colorado Ron and Bubba DaVinci.
Hey, this is Bubba Da Vinci with Colorado Ron, and you're listening to Backwoods Homes Magazine Self-Reliance Exposed. How are you doing, Colorado?
Doing good, man. Doing good. How are you?
I am good. Yeah. That's what I'm going to stick with. No. Just a little tired. Yeah, I'm trying to get all puffed up. I just drove in from Texas, and that's a long drive, as you know.
That was an all-nighter.
Yeah, that's. I like doing those long drives and single hauls, because it's like I have nothing else to do in my life but drive. So.
I can't believe you pulled an all-nighter though. That's a lot of driving, and then turn around and get ready for radio. You pulled only 45 minutes ago?
Yeah, it was about that. Yeah, it was nice. It's raining. Well, I actually I picked up my Suburban while I was down in Texas doing some business, and also my wife had agreed for us to take a friend's cat and bring it up to the property because we need another animal, and they had moved into an apartment and they couldn't keep it anymore. And so somehow we got talked into doing it. So I wanted to try to drive when it was cool, because driving in a closed Suburban with a cat is first of all, I'm a little bit allergic to cats, and number two, the smell sometimes is not all that great. So
yeah.
Especially on a 12, 15 hour drive. So I decided I'll drive in the coolness with the windows down. And, anyway.
Oh my goodness.
But I'm back. I'm back. I made it back in time for the radio show, which was good. We got Jackie Clay on today, so I always like talking to Jackie. I wanted to make sure I was here in time.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. The it's just been a crazy week, getting ready for this upcoming expo and out in Hickory, and so we've just been running and gunning, and I started mapping it out. That's going to be a long drive.
You and your family are driving down, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to bring my boys and my dad. So I thought, well, we could either buy 4 plane tickets or just drive. So we'll just drive.
Yeah. So how long is it for you?
It's going to be a minimum of two and a half days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because we pull into Kansas, Kansas from here to Kansas is about 10 hours, so we'll pull into Kansas and then rest there and then maybe go a little bit past Kansas. We could probably pull it off in 2 days if we push it, and then 2 days back. So.
Well, and the problem is that you want to try to make the trip fun for the other people and not burn yourself out. Because then you have to get there and you have to operate it, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, so, but, hey, it's, we're excited. We're ready to go. So, it's going to be a lot of fun. So.
So did we end up getting any updates on our potential surprise mystery guest?
We have not, but I hear that he's calling me on Monday.
Okay, so, man, I really wanted to announce that.
I know. I was really trying to get him to call so that we could announce it today. But, yeah, I heard that he's going to call me. I heard he's going to call me on Monday.
All right. Well, maybe what we can do is we can say, we're announcing the entire speaker schedule on Monday, and the reason why is I still have one person that still hasn't replied to me on all their information. But more than that is we're probably 80-90% sure that that we are going to have a fairly well-known author at the event, prepping survival author. And, and we're not talking about, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, because they are well-known and they will be at the event because they do have a book out. But, I mean, someone that's actually
– Pardon me? This is a new one. Somebody that's never been never presented at our expo before.
Right, right, right. And, you know, this is a book topping, someone that hits the book list, and we're not talking about like Amazon.com bestseller or most popular. You know, we're talking about, New York Times bestselling author sort of person. So, yeah, anyway, very exciting stuff, and hopefully we'll be able to answer that on Monday, and I think that'll really add something to the event. I'm looking forward to it. I'm actually looking forward to meeting this person. So, fine.
Yeah, I've never seen you so giddy.
Yeah, I know. It's not giddy. I mean, this person is a fairly highly respected not only author. He's written this book. It's a he, and but he was able to get, I believe it was Newt Gingrich and several other members of Congress and everything else to actually write the foreword of his book. So, I mean, obviously you have to be fairly well respected in the information you're writing if you're able to get, people like that to write in your book.
Yeah, no kidding.
So, anyway, I was hoping we'd be able to get that news out and everything else. So what else has been going on this week? I mean, I know for me, I went down to Texas. I was down there for a couple of days and did the drive back. That's pretty much what happened for my week. I know you've been going like gangbusters. Have you gotten any of your projects completed? Hello? Oh, my goodness. It looks like I lost Colorado Ron. Colorado. All right. Well, I guess I'll just go ahead and kind of keep going. I know one of the things that I'm looking at doing over this next week is we're getting ready to go ahead and get ready for winter. So as we get ready for winter, one of the things I want to start doing is prepping all my tools. I've got a bunch of tools that a bunch of tools that are getting rusty. Some of them are rusted that I picked up at events, like auctions and garage sales and everything else. But others are things that have gotten wet or just gotten in the weather throughout the remainder of this year. And I want to make sure that I get that done prior to winter getting here. And so I think we'll probably talk a little bit more about that here shortly. I am not sure if I'm not sure exactly what's going on with our audio, but we seem to have we could be talking over each other. We've both kind of lost sound here.
You're both good to go.
I can hear you, Steve, but I can't hear Colorado.
Okay, Ron, if you could call back in, please.
All right, well, I'm going to keep going. I don't know if we were talking over each other. So if we were, I apologize. Winterizing, I think, is the main topic of today. When we get Jackie Clay on, she'll be on after the first commercial, which is our 10:30 at our half hour. And I think we're going to be talking about talking about gardening and everything else and how to get ready, what you're going to be looking at for your garden at this point. And then additionally, I had asked her to if we could discuss how to winterize your animals. Are you back on, Colorado?
I'm here.
There you are, man.
I kept talking. I thought I couldn't tell if I dropped or you dropped, so I just kept on the talking.
I apologize to the audience. It could have been either one of us, or they could have been hearing both of us, and we were talking over each other. I just figured. Yeah, the show's got to go on, so I just kept on going.
Oh my goodness!
What were you talking about?
Well, I went into the Homestead Hunter segment. What are you talking about?
I was talking about winterizing. So let's do this. We still have 10 minutes to cover before we have to go to commercial break. So let's go on to Homestead Hunter and repeat that. And so everybody, you get to hear both things all over again, or one or the other. We don't have any clue what's going on. If you heard his and you didn't hear mine, then go get your coffee. And then when I go ahead and go back over mine, then you can go and get something to drink if you've heard the other. So, all right, Homestead Hunter. Colorado Ron, tell us about Homestead Hunter this week.
All right, so Homestead Hunter this week I found on Zillow. And one of the things I wanted to talk about was, you know, Bubba, you're in Iowa. And so I thought I would start looking around in Iowa just out of curiosity. And I was shocked at some of the home prices there. I mean, the home prices there are ridiculously cheap. And the one I found, again, you guys, for a link, we'll put it in the chat room. And also we'll have it on my Facebook page, which is Facebook.com/ Colorado Ron page. This link is to a home that is in Cheriton, Iowa. And the reason I picked this one is, first of all, it was 4-bedroom, 2-bath, and it was 2,100 square feet, which is a decent size. It's a 2-story, very traditional, you know, something you'd see like on Little House on the Prairie. You know, it had 24 acres that went with it for $92,500. So,
wait,
you know,
wait,
again,
$92,500?
Yeah, the estimated value is $173,000. What we've got on here is, you know, if you remember, our requirements were it had to be a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, had to be at least 5 acres, and had to be under $150,000. This is an hour to the airport in Des Moines, Iowa. So I tried to get something that was fairly close, just because people, you know, need to travel. So Des Moines, Iowa is the closest airport, and it's just under an hour away. Again, it's 24 acres. It says it's 12.9 of it is tillable, so almost 13 acres is tillable. Balance of pasture, large square home, has newer kitchen, ceiling, electricity, plumbing, and bathrooms. Home has original, this is the part that got my wife all giddy, home has original pocket doors and wood floors. And a lot of the work has been done. You just made to make some cosmetic decisions. So it sounds like you need to go in there and choose your paint colors and finish out the house.
Right.
And so it's got a bunch of large shade trees around it. Nice home. Again, the link is on our Facebook page. It should be in the chat room. So if you downloaded this, just go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/ Colorado Ron page, and the link will be there.
Now I always play devil's advocate on all this stuff. So one of the good things on this piece of property is you're also about 25 minutes from Bubba Da Vinci. This is about you picked a property that's literally about 25 to 30 minutes east of where I live. So you've actually been over here or over by this area. This is very near where you went to where they have that LDS cemetery.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah, this is like 5 miles down the road from that.
Now, keep in mind, everybody, if you're planning to move to Iowa and you're planning to move to this house, be ready for some serious cold. When we went to that, you know, I can handle some cold, Bubba. And I usually go, you know, jacketless, coatless, whatever, and I can usually handle some cold. It was flipping cold to the bone. I could not, my bones and my joints ached that day we went out to the cemetery. I could not believe how cold it was.
and that wasn't a cold winter. So that's the funny thing. Here's the other thing about this property. So Iowa's got some really good hunting and fishing. We're an agricultural state, lots of hardwood, lots of lakes, things like that. If you were to look at this property, you know, the only downside I see to this is farmland. This is 24 acres, 13 acres are basically tillable. So it's a large pasture.
Yep.
It looks like they probably the tillable land was probably corn or beans, 12 acres of that. And then the other section is pasture or grassland. So this isn't, if you're looking for something that, you know, has a, you know, this isn't like where I live where there's a lot of trees and things like that. This is a farm. This is a straight up farm. So if that's what you're looking to get into, this is a great price. I mean, basically 24 acres for $92,000 with a house that's all done. Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah. So is that a good find?
That's an excellent find. That's really, really good. And if you're looking to get into farming and having your own stuff and everything else, this would be perfect. I'm looking up where it is. It's really close to Osceola and everything, so the stores are real. You're closer to them than they are to us. I'm sorry.
What's in Sheridan? Nothing.
Not much. Yeah, it's the town that it's in is very similar to the town that I'm in, just on the opposite side of Osceola. So, and it's exactly I do this drive. I'm sorry.
Is Osceola the big town, so to speak, the one with the Walmart and all the stuff?
Correct. Osceola would be your medium sized town, and obviously Des Moines is your big town. And from where Sheridan is, you're exactly about 40-45 minutes away from Des Moines. You just go straight up 35. So yep. Good find, Colorado. This is a good piece of property for someone that wants to get into the farming.
There you go.
Awesome. All right. Well, good find this week. And if this is something you're interested in, or this type of property, you know, send us an email or hit Colorado up on Facebook or me up on Facebook, and I'd be happy to come meet you. And when you look at the property and everything else, and say, hey, I've lived up here for a year now, and I'm not completely hating it yet. I mean, we haven't had a bad winter yet, so I mean, it cracks me up that, you know, I've been up here and it's like, oh God, I hope we don't have a horrible winter this year. Because you're right. I mean, it was cold last year with the wind and everything else, but it's nothing like, you know, what happens when you have snow. So anyway, so speaking of cold and snow and properties and everything else, let's go ahead and get my last topic before we go to commercial break. And what I was saying was, and I guess we'll go ahead and jump on it a little bit after we talk to Jackie too, is a majority of this show is going to be about winterizing. You know, we're, believe it or not, straight into fall. I mean, you see the hurricanes are already starting to come off the coast of Florida. Everything is completely cooled down here. And you know, winter is just right around the corner. And so, you know, you're getting your canning completed. You got to start working on cleaning up your garden. You know, we should talk to Jackie about what sort of winter, crops or things that you guys can plant as part of it. And, you know, more than anything else, it's, you know, I asked her, it's like, how do you winterize your animals? Because, you know, Colorado, you just started, you just got quail, right?
Yep.
And some bunnies.
Yes, I did.
And,
rabbit,
you know.
Yep, we're good to go on that.
Yep. And you know, have my chickens and stuff. And so you get to the point where, you know, you have to kind of figure out, especially if you're just getting into this stuff. So many people this year got into chickens and goats and quail and rabbits. And if you're in an area that has bad winters and snow and things like that, you know, what do you do? I mean, how do you keep them outside? You know, do you have to winterize the hutches and the coops and things like that? Do you kill half of them off and just keep some of them? You know, so a lot of people don't know what to do. And I've seen a lot of chatter on Facebook and Twitter saying, you know, I'm not sure what I'm going to do this winter with feed prices going up and with, what do I do with my chickens during the winter? Because I can't just let them out to scratch. And I was like, oh, that's a good question. Can you let your chickens out to scratch during the winter? Of course you can. You know, how much they'll find, who knows? So you've got to start planning now. And so I think a majority of what the session today is going to be with Jackie is talking about how to winterize things. And then additionally, you should start winterizing your tools and your most commonly used items. And I was saying, when I didn't know you were still talking, that you know, one of my projects for this week is to go through my garage and some of my tools. And it happens every season. It happened less in Texas because it was so dry. But, you know, some of your tools will get rust on them. Wheelbarrows, you know, screwdrivers, whatever it is, if they got any elements and things like that, things will start rusting. And so this week what I'm going to start doing is going through my tools, removing the rust that's on the items that's there, and getting them ready for winter by, you know, coating them with WD-40 and things like that, so the moisture in the air doesn't corrode them and make them unusable during the winter.
Gotcha.
And so you know, next week I'm probably going to talk about that. But that's my big project, is getting ready for winter and winterizing. I know it seems early. Wow, you just posted a thing. So your current project is you just put two radios inside your new vehicle.
Oh, yeah, Project Haas. So, yeah, I went ahead and got my CV mounted and my 2-meter mounted in the truck. So, first project was communications. So I got those both mounted this week and plugged in. One tip on that, by the way, is something I do, and others might like doing this, is instead of running all the wires for all the radios all the way up to the battery and plugging them in up there, is I snip the ends and I put cigarette lighter plug-ins on them, and then I put a multi-cigarette lighter plug-in under the dash so that it's easy to just disconnect them or keep them connected or whatever, you know what I mean? So you don't have to have them connected directly to the battery all the time.
Your dash looks pretty nice there for such an old truck.
Yeah, I know. It really killed me, actually, to drill the holes for the 2-meter radio. I can't believe I'm doing this.
Now, you have a CB and a 2-meter, so you have to run two different antennas.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yep, so I've got one. The 2-meter is up on the roof, and the CB one is mounted down by the hood.
Very cool.
That's the radio.
Very cool.
On the other side.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. It looks pretty good. It looks pretty good, Colorado.
We're getting there. We're getting there. Slowly but surely. I got to get ready for winter now, like you talked about, getting it all winterized. I want to get all the differential fluids changed out and get all the bearings packed. One of the things a lot of people don't realize is in the winter is that, you know, if you haven't repacked your bearings in a while, they start making all kinds of noises, and your brakes, your brake calipers start freezing up and things like that. So we're going to go through all that and make sure everything's greased and lubricated and ready to go. All the door hinges are greased. So
yeah, I've got to find a way. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say on the Suburban, what I've got to do is I've got so many rust spots that have to be cut out and redone. It probably won't be a winter project because, you know, we use it a lot in the winter. But, you know, that's one of the main things I have to do is get all this rust cut out before it just gets way out of control.
Yeah. Well, what's nice about that one is they got so many patch panels for that truck. You could pretty much just order any patch panel you want.
I'd have to replace the entire truck. That's what I'm thinking. Just take the whole body off and put a whole new one on. That's the easy way. I mean, it now has a brand new engine and a brand new transmission, both with less than 1,000 miles on it. So
nice. The good thing is that if you want to stay under the radar, is not even worry about patching the body for now. That's what I'm going to do with this one. Is I'm not worried about looks for now. I'm just going to worry about making sure everything inside is what I need.
No, I agree. Matter of fact, I don't want to make you. You've seen my trucks. None of them are pretty. So I can't be accused of being of worrying about the looks of my vehicles. They're all on the down low. That's the way Bubba rolls.
Oh, yeah, right. You do have some fucking ones. I can vouch for that.
All right, well, let's go ahead and go to commercial break. And when we come back, we'll be live with Jackie Clay from the even colder than Iowa, Minnesota. So we'll be taking a quick break. Talk to you later.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
Hey, meat eaters, the freeze-dry guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dry guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The freeze-dry guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes six number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every meat eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our one-year-plus meat eater's units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the freeze-dry guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
If everything you eat comes out of boxes stored in your freezer, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo. If you're afraid to take out your own garbage because the neighbor kids might beat you up, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo.
Over 50 free training classes are coming to the Self-Reliance Expo at the Hickory Convention Center Friday, September 14th and Saturday, September 15th. Gardening, alternative home building, off-grid living, food preservation, cooking with the sun, self-defense classes, canine demos, and more.
If you can kill a houseplant just by looking at it, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo.
This event is fun for the whole family and is the largest of its kind in the nation. Learn how to do it yourself. Learn how to defend yourself. Save money. Save a life.
If the only screwdriver you own is made of orange juice and vodka, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo.
It's the Self-Reliance Expo at the Hickory Convention Center, Friday, September 14th and Saturday, September 15th. Go to selfrelianceexpo.com for information and tickets.
Want to reduce your dependence on the electrical grid? Trying to save money on groceries? Preparing for a major power outage? We can help. Layman's is your source for everything you need for heat, food, light, and water when there is no power. Glenda Lehman Irvin here for Layman's in Kidron, Ohio. My father, Jay Lehman, founded our store in 1955 to serve the local Amish with non-electric appliances, tools, and houseware items. Today, through our website, laymans.com, a print catalog, and a retail store, we provide oil lamps, water pumps, wood stoves, canning supplies, and hand tools to customers all over the world. If you think it isn't made anymore, check with Layman's before you give up. Visit laymans.com or call us at 1-877-438-5346 for a free catalog, or just stop by. We're located about an hour south of Cleveland.
Thanks for listening to A Word from Our Sponsor. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Backwoods Home, Self-Reliance Exposed, with Colorado Ron and Bubba DaVinci. All right, so, you know, I was going through Colorado and, you know, reading the current issue, which is issue 137, September-October, Backwoods Home Magazine, and the very first article inside the magazine is by Jackie, and it's called Meat for the Homestead. Have you had a chance to read it yet?
I did. Of course, every time I read this thing cover to cover as soon as it comes in.
Well, good for you. And you know, and then because I don't, I Backwoods Home's going to kill me for saying this, but you know what I typically do is I get the magazine in and I look at all the articles in there and I prioritize them by what I'm interested in, and you know for the most part, Jack. Yeah, or you know. What I'm planning on working on next, but I'll never get to, and you know typically Jackie's are top of the list, and Jackie's an amazing woman, and so I think we have her on live now. Jackie, you there?
Oh, you bet I am. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, young lady. How are you?
I'm fine.
Wonderful. So you actually had two articles in this month's magazine. I read them both, and you had the Meat for the Homestead, and then you had one on pickling.
Yes, food is a big item at our house.
Here too.
It's one of Colorado's also. Just kidding. Of course, you've seen me, Jackie, so there's no meals lost in my house either, but I just like pointing out that Colorado likes to eat. And let me tell you, pickling scares the bejesus out of me.
It shouldn't. It's so easy, and it's not rocket science.
I've had so many bad experiences with pickled products. We've never pickled ourselves, but, there's always a friend that comes up and goes, oh, here's some pickled green beans or some pickled this or pickled that, and then you get in there. And, when pickling is good, it's, like, awesome. Like, I love pickled eggs. I love pickled pig's feet. But when someone does it incorrectly or whatever, it's, like, the worst experience in the entire world.
Yeah, I can relate to that because I've had some horrendous pickles too. Not any that are homemade, may I add, but most of them are ones that, like you say, have been done incorrectly by somebody's old family recipe that somebody hurried through and forgot a few steps. But in my book, Growing and Canning Your Own Food, there's a whole bunch of pickle recipes that I have tried every single one of them, and they all work. So. Get out those pickle jars and get at it.
So let me ask you, what's the biggest thing for me, and I don't know how Colorado feels about this, is, and this is going to sound horrible, but I hate limp product. I hate when you get in there and the stuff for some reason doesn't stay crisp when you open it up much later. It's mushy. Some people don't care because they use it for mixing other things. Is there a secret to keeping, like, your pickles crisp and, everything firm so it doesn't disintegrate in the jar?
Yeah, the number one tip is pick a recipe that you're not boiling your cucumbers over and over again or for a lengthy period of time. They are cucumbers, and the more you boil them, the limper they get. And the number two tip is pick your cucumbers in the morning right out of your garden when they're cool from the evening and bring them in and immediately pickle them. The longer you let cucumbers sit at room temperature or even in the refrigerator, the more limp your pickles are going to be.
See, that just sounds bad.
Yeah. Yes, it does. when they're all kind of wrinkled and shriveled up from being in the refrigerator for several days, or, oops, I forgot them on the counter and it's 90 degrees out, I picked them this morning, but tomorrow morning I feel like making pickles. I'm sorry, though, no matter what you do, they're going to be limp pickles, and they are awful.
That's really good advice, and I'll make sure that I do it. Now, I have one more question before I let Colorado do it. Now, I was reading, because one of the things, as you know, I think we talked about this the last time you were on, I went ahead and got some chickens this year, and my chickens are producing real well, and I wanted to pickle some eggs, because I love pickled eggs. And I read this cute article that said that, it is more difficult to pickle farm fresh eggs than it is store-bought eggs. Is that true, and why would that be?
It's not more difficult to pickle farm fresh eggs than store-bought eggs. It's harder to peel hard-boiled eggs that are fresh. The ones you buy in the store are usually about 4 weeks old, and the air sac has kind of gone from one little concentrated spot on the end of the egg, the top end of the egg, it's kind of filtered all the way around the egg. So when you boil it, those peels come off a lot easier. So what I do is I pick my farm fresh eggs, and then I just sit them in the refrigerator for a couple weeks, and they peel real nice. There's all kinds of tips that people say, I do this, I do that. And I have tried every single one of them, and still eggs that are fresh are very hard to peel. So you can tell if your egg's hard to peel, it's a fresh egg.
Okay. All right. So, so I must have misunderstood the article. Go ahead.
Pardon?
Well, speaking of eggs, I had a question. A couple of weeks ago, we had a little debate on here about eggs, and we were actually going to call you up in the middle of the show. But one of the questions we had was when I bought some store-bought eggs, brought them home, and it was my understanding that if I coat them in mineral oil and put them in a cool spot, that will preserve them. Is that true? Have you read that or heard about that or tried that yourself?
Yes.
Sweet.
Done it all. to tell you the honest to God truth, I haven't had better luck coating them with mineral oil than I have just leaving them in a carton and storing them in a cool place. When we lived really, really remote up in the mountains in Montana, we were snowed in for 6 months out of the year. And so I would stockpile eggs, and I would store them from December until May. And May was when we could finally get out. And so that's, you know, several months. They were not coated. They were not nothing was done to them to preserve them. I kept them in the carton, you know, so they were individual. I laid them on the floor in my pantry that stayed about 35 degrees. And towards spring, the whites would get a little runny. Some of the yolks would be a little nasty. I'd break the eggs in a cup and make sure they were still okay, and then I'd go ahead and use them. But I've tried everything. I've tried water glassing my eggs, and water glassing is kind of it's a powder you mix with water in a crock. You put your eggs in it. It coats the pores like the mineral oil. And it does work, but reaching your arm down into a crock full of snotty, slimy, cold stuff really never appealed to me. So I used it a couple times, and I just went, oh, my God, no, no, no.
Okay, so... So I should be safe here, because what I did is I brought them home and I coated them with mineral oil, put them back in the carton, and then I put them all down in the basement, down on the floor, where it stays the coolest. So
yeah,
hopefully that works.
They're good. They'll be good for months. If you use, instead of store-bought eggs, if you use real chicken eggs right from the farm, I've seen the concentration camp conditions that those egg factory chickens live in, and oh my gosh, no thank you. Anyway, those eggs are, like I said, they're like 3 or 4 weeks old when you get them, sometimes older than that. So you've already knocked a month's worth of storage off on those store-bought eggs. So if you can get, you know, fresh eggs and then, you know, store them, they certainly last longer.
And I think it just to kind of make sure, that was the argument. I think the discussion in Colorado was you were saying that they were, according to what you read, it was like you got 9 months out of them if you bought them in the store and coated them. And my whole thing was I didn't think they were going to get that long because the time span was already being taken up. I mean, from what I had read, they could be anywhere from 4 weeks to 8 weeks by the time they hit the Walmart or grocery store shelf. And then you were talking about buying repacks, and so I was thinking they were even older. So I was saying I didn't think you would get 9 months out of them if you bought them at the store.
I don't believe you get 9 months out of them regardless, to tell you the honest truth. I think 6-7 months is a lot more realistic.
Okay. I should probably go date them. I didn't do that. I probably should date the cartons when I bought them.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And in all fairness, they were 100% certified organic, so I don't know if that makes a difference in the concentration camp or not. But
no, actually not. It just means they were fed organic feed, but they could still be old eggs. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they
could,
and there's still probably 400 chickens to the square foot.
Yeah, even it's pretty pathetic because even the free range chickens that are producing commercial eggs, free range legally means that they have access to like a square foot of ground to walk on or something. It's pretty pathetic. You know, it doesn't mean they're all scratching in the orchard.
Wow, that is pathetic. All right, so let's move on to the next topic, which was rabbits. Rabbits. I'm excited. I have my rabbits now. I have two bucks and two does, and so now I'm ready to start producing. So I've got them all in hutches, and it's my understanding that they can handle the cold pretty well. Is that right?
Yes, they can, provided that they have protection against drafts and, like, snow and freezing rain and things like that, yeah.
Okay. Yep, they're good to go on that. So, now, how in the world do you keep water from freezing when you're feeding these animals? Because, you know, I'm looking at, you know, I have quail and I have rabbits. And one of the things I don't want is to sit there and constantly babysitting them. I'm trying to figure out how to automate these systems and keep it so that I'm not having to go out there, you know, 2-3 times a day to take care of them.
That can be a problem. for you know, larger livestock, goat, sheep, horses, cows, you can put a stock tank heater in a big stock tank. With small animals like chickens, rabbits, it gets a little more difficult. Now they have, if you're on grid, they have a watering pan for chickens or watering containers that have an electric heat element in them, so they keep the water thawed. But for rabbits, because they're smaller, you don't have room for such a big unit in each hutch, and if you use that for like a supply tank and use lines off of it to each hutch, those lines are going to freeze on you.
Right.
I honestly, you know, I've had rabbits for years and years, and what I do is just twice a day I go out with a gallon of warm water and I dump out the ice and put in some fresh water, and just twice a day when I feed them I do that. That's my Jackie Clay Atkinson automated rabbit watering system. sorry guys.
No, but you know, the reason we wanted to talk about this, Jackie, is, you know, more and more people this year, or we'll even say just currently, are all looking about being prepared and things like that. And whether you're in a city, a rural environment, or an urban environment, people have done like Colorado has done, which has gotten rabbits. He's got quail, and he lives in suburbia. And, you know, people like me who have just moved out to the country, you know, it's all peaches and cream when spring comes and you're starting to set all this stuff up and everything's a perfect environment. But most people don't even think about what they're going to do when winter gets here. And, you know, I'll be honest. I mean, you guys have probably, I don't know if you've seen pictures, Colorado has, of my chicken fort. You know, and it's all cool and everything else, but I'm like, wow, I never even thought about insulating the darn thing. What do I do for winter? So, I mean, your current article, you're talking about meat on the farm. You know, overall, I mean, what kind of tips can you give people about just winterizing for your animals? Then we'll get into winterizing your gardens and what you should be doing for your winter gardens.
The most important thing for all your animals is make sure that they've got a shelter, that they're protected from wind, freezing rain, driving snow. We live in northern Minnesota, and it gets, you know, 35, 40 below. And my chicken coop is not currently insulated. It's a ragtag little outfit I put on the barn because I wanted to have chickens, and I built it out of scrap from the dump. And I've had chickens in it for 5 years and never lost a chicken due to cold. But every fall, I go through the whole chicken coop and I caulk up all the cracks, any cracks. I stuff insulation in bigger cracks. The windows are all plasticed over on the outside with, you know, a heavy gauge plastic, and the chickens can't reach it because they'll eat the plastic if they can. Don't put insulation inside your chicken coop unless you protect it with a lightweight paneling, because chickens love to eat the foam board. They just, they'll gobble it right up, and I can't believe that that's very good for them. So if you do decide to put some insulation in your chicken coop, please don't just leave it open because they'll eat it. I shut my chickens in at night so that they're not having to deal with the drafts from the door. But in the daytime, I leave the door open on a decent day, and they go outside and they run around in the snow and sun themselves, and it can be 20 below, and my chickens are out running around outside just enjoying it. Like the rabbits, I make sure my chickens have some warm water twice a day. I go out, I've got a couple gallon jugs, and I just fill them up in the house with some warm water and go out. I've got rubber pans for water, and I just tunk out the ice that's formed in them and put in some fresh. You know, if you've got power, you're on grid, you can use one of the heated waters. That works really good. For any animal, make sure they've got dry bedding and lots of it. They cuddle down in the bedding and they're cozy, but if they're just standing on manure and bare boards, they're going to shiver and freeze all night, and that makes stress for them, and they're real prone to getting pneumonia or anything like that just from the stress. Having too warm a building for your animals and having a lot of them in there, I've got some friends that have a whole lot of chickens in a small coop, and they leave them shut in all winter. They don't open the door. They don't let them outside. And they have a lot of respiratory problems from those chickens producing too much moisture in there. There's condensation on the inside of the coop, and it's wet. And on the ceiling, it's dripping. And animals and birds just can't handle that. They've got to have a little bit of ventilation in their coop. Yeah, my ventilation is opening the door once in a while. Somebody else's ventilation may be having some ventilators. Like your rabbits, make sure that their hutch has got a nest box in it that's got some straw that they can cuddle up in. Make sure they've got lots and lots to eat. It takes a lot of calories in the wintertime to keep warm, and you can't feed them the same amount that you do in the summertime and expect them to be fat and warm. They just can't handle that. So a few extra calories in the winter goes a long way. Any other questions
that note,
here?
Yeah, I mean, on those two notes there. So right now my chickens, we have bars across there, and they perch. That's where they sleep. Are you saying that in the wintertime they're more prone to go ahead and stay on the ground and probably cuddle up into the nesting than they are going to be, sitting there and using the normal perching?
No, they'll use the roost, and that's okay.
Roost, thank you.
Because chickens, like wild birds, they get on a roost, and they squash right down so their breast is sitting right on their feet, so their body keeps their feet warm, and then they fluff their feathers out, and that air space in between the feathers acts as insulation and keeps them warm. So they're fine. The only problem I have ever had or seen in a really, really cold winter is if they're in an uninsulated coop, sometimes if they've got tall combs, the combs may frost and freeze. And what will happen is it'll turn black and then it'll fall off. It doesn't seem to actually harm them, but if you live in a cold climate and don't want that to happen, either insulate your coop, heat your coop, like with a heat lamp, or pick a breed that has a rose comb, the little short, bumpy combs, instead of like a white rock that has a real big, pointy comb, because the rose comb breeds have a real close, tight comb, and it won't freeze in the cold weather.
And are you suggesting, and last question, then we'll let Colorado Ron jump in here on his rabbits. My plan was every single day, just like I do now, to open the doors and let them get out, because I had read in several different places
that if the birds get up and exercise on a fairly regular basis, they're less prone to getting respiratory issues, including during the winter, than if you keep them confined and don't let them move around a lot. So I was just going to keep continuing to feed them underneath the eave, because there's, you know, I have my main chicken coop, and then you open the door and they've got an area that's under a roof that they can do some scratching inside there. My goal was to still go ahead and put the feed out there, so they had to come out to eat.
I would keep the food inside so they don't have to go out to eat, but open the door so if they want to go out, they can.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the time they will go out, but by putting their food outside, you're kind of forcing them to go out. And trust me, they'll get out and adventure around as much as they possibly can on their own.
Okay. Good to know. Yeah, I'm already stocking up with the prices going up as much as they are. I'm already stocking up on food for the winter because I think it's going to be a bad one.
Yeah, definitely, because of the drought in the south and in the corn country. Both corn and soybeans, the crop is really going to be terrible. And already the grain prices have gone up a couple bucks a hundred. So it'd probably be a good idea for anybody that can afford it is to stockpile up on your chicken feed and any other livestock or poultry feed that has corn and soybean, which is pretty much all of it. Even our dog food prices are going up, so it's amazing. Our money lasts less and less long than it used to.
Yeah, no kidding.
Sure.
Is there any sort of food that you recommend more for winter than another? I mean, because like right now, if I supplement, it's all scratch. It's scratch grains, but I'm not sure if that's got enough in there to, you know, for the winter.
Yeah, that's fine, because it's got plenty of carbohydrates in it, and it's the carbohydrates that they need.
Now, as far as storing the food, one of the things that I'm looking at trying to do is I want a year supply of food, or at least 6 months supply of food for my rabbits and for my quail. Should I just store that in a trash can, or a new trash can, obviously, or what's the best way to store that long term so that I don't have it go bad on me?
It won't go bad on you, but what might happen is you may get mice or some other rodents that get in and chew holes in the bag. Storing them in a metal garbage can, a new one, of course, is absolutely the best. Or if you've got more animals, if you can make an enclosed bin, sometimes plywood is enough if you don't have really voracious rats and squirrels that might chew through it. You know, make a plywood bin and stack your bags of feed in there. Anything to keep the moisture out and the little furry creatures from chewing holes. And not only do they waste the food, I mean, you're feeding a herd of mice, that's not economical, but they also urinate and leave their little mouse raisins and stuff in there. So that's not real good for your animals to be exposed to, you know.
Right, right. So, I mean, if I bought like a metal trash can, should I open the bags and dump them in so that I get more into the into that metal trash can, or should I keep them in the bags and just try and get as many bags in there as I can?
No, go ahead and open them and dump it in there. That'll work fine.
Okay. My biggest worry was that maybe condensation or something would happen, and by the time I got down to the bottom, it'd all be, you know, maggot filled or something like that.
No. As long as you've got, okay. You know, you don't want to set your cans outside or something, because it's possible, you know, driving rain could possibly get in there. I don't think it would, but you never can tell, you know. So keep your cans inside, and it'll be fine.
Okay. Good. That was my main thing. I think that's what I'm going to handle today. Get that solved.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do the circle of life method, which is I'm going to take my food and keep it in the garage and purposely leave it open so that way the mice are getting into it, and then put my new cat out there so I don't have to feed my cat.
Sounds good in theory. Doesn't work.
All right. Killjoy.
I guess I am. But I'll tell you, our cat Mittens has gotten to be the best hunter in the world, and we have our feed enclosed, but she goes out and she kills mice, squirrels, all kinds of stuff. And the only thing is she kills them, brings them on the porch, and says, "Here I am, look what I caught, open the door and let me in to get my cat food."
Oh, that's funny. Now, as far as I was looking at all the other animals in the article that you had here, and do you have all these animals on your farm?
Pretty much, actually. I don't have rabbits right now, but we have chickens, we have turkeys, we have cattle, we've got a milk cow, and then we've got beef steers. We've got pigs. We just had 2 litters of baby pigs. And we've got
goats?
Horses and... Yes, oh, pardon me. Yes, I can't forget the goats. I got like 14 big goats and a few little ones. And yeah.
You know, when I went out and got some of my rabbits, I got some goat milk from the guy that are there. And that had to be some real... I was really impressed how good fresh goat milk was. He had just milked the goat that morning, and that was the first time I've ever had it, and it was delish.
Well, everybody has this goofy idea. I guess it's all the old cartoons and stuff about billy goats and nanny goats, and oh, they stink and this and that, and they expect goat milk to be so nasty, and you know, it's just unbelievable to me. Everybody that I give fresh goat milk to has the same reaction. It's like, oh, this isn't goat milk. This is cow milk. I can tell. if it tasted horrible, I would not be, you know, bothering. It's wonderful. We make cheese out of it. We're pretty much about 85 to 90% food self-sufficient here on our place, and we'd like to get even a little better than that. We'd like to work up to about 95%. There's some things, obviously, we can't raise. You know, we can't raise sugar. We can't raise rice. You know, so
salt.
There's a few things. Yeah, salt we have a problem with. So there's always going to be things that we have to buy. But if we had to get by without them, we certainly could. The things that we cannot raise here, we try to raise enough of the things that we can raise that we can sell them and buy what we need. So it all works out pretty good. You know, every year we try to get just a little further down the path and, you know, see how many more things that we can raise ourselves. Right now, you know, we've got all these beef steers and we've got the goats and the horses, and we've been having to buy hay. And so slowly we've built up our stock of farming machinery. So this year we're farming 2 separate farms and making our own hay, so we don't have to buy hay. So we're every year we're trying to get a little further towards total self-reliance.
I mean, that makes for a full-time job.
Pretty much it does. Yes, it does. But think about it. When you work at an outside job, most of your money goes into food.
That's true.
We're cutting out the middleman.
That's a good point. That is a good point. You don't work outside the home, right? Just on the homestead itself, correct?
Well, other than writing.
Yeah, I'm writing. Okay.
No.
So with your chickens, I saw that you had the turkey. I looked at the pictures here, and the turkeys are mixed with the chickens, and that's I suppose that's just fine.
Well, you know, for years and years, it's been this thing. Oh, don't have your turkeys with your chickens because they could transmit blackhead. In a commercial situation, yes, that's possible. On a homestead, I have never, ever, ever heard of a turkey giving a chicken blackhead or even a turkey getting blackhead. You know, these are things that happen in a commercial situation where there's lots and lots and lots and lots of birds.
Gotcha. Now, the other thing that I heard, well, the only experience I've ever had with goats was this old man that lived next door to us out in the middle of nowhere when we lived in Texas. And he had his goat chained to a rim, and basically that was it. He called it his mobile lawnmower, and he would just pick up that rim, walk, you know, 50 feet, set the rim down, and then, you know, left the goat there for a couple of days, trimming down everything, and then he'd pick the rim back up and walk over somewhere else and set it down. And that's pretty much what he used to keep the weed control down in his back acre land there. And do they really pretty much eat anything?
Well, yes and no. Did that guy have kids? Did he have them chained up on chains out in his backyard? I could just see it now. It is not the best care for a goat to keep it on a chain and a tire rim moving. I mean, think about it.
No, it was horrible. It was the worst experience ever.
No shade, no water. I mean, that's the trouble. You know, a lot of animals are cared for that way, and it just gives me cold chills. You know,
yeah,
our goats have.
My only experience.
You know, our goats have an acre of pasture. They've got shade trees. They've got a little goat cottage that people could live in. You know, goats will eat a lot of different things, but goats are smart and they will not eat a poisonous plant unless they don't have anything else to eat. In our goat pasture, there's bracken fern, and that's poisonous. And there really is no way of getting rid of it without using chemicals. But, you know, our goats have enough to eat. That there's a bunch of bracken fern out there, and they're just standing there, and they don't eat them. But they are a good brush cleaner. They are like a deer. They like to eat brush. They'd rather eat brush than your lawn. So think about the guy and his chained-up goat, and that poor chained-up goat's forced to eat grass. And goats are browsers, not grazers like cattle. So, you know, that's like second string starvation for that poor goat.
Jeez.
But goats have to have a good fence. If you buy goats and say, well, I'm going to clear out this brush in my back field, number one, goats like people, and they're not going to stay out in the back field all by themselves. They get lonely, and they're going to come up and stand on your porch waiting for you to come out. And while they're out there, they're going to eat your flowers, they're going to eat your fruit trees, whatever. So if you're going to have goats, you've got to fence them in well. Our goats have both a wire fence, you know, a welded wire fence, and two strands of hot wire on the inside of it to keep them from reaching through or standing on a fence. So the biggest problem with people buying goats is they never get enough fence. You can use the welded stock panels. They work really good, you know, to contain them. But, you know, if you buy a goat and just turn it loose, it's going to end up in your yard eating things that it shouldn't.
I can testify to that because, you know, we decided, you know, my father-in-law had a goat, and I said, hey, I would like to bring your, you know, I want your goat, because he just had the one, and I'm going to put it in my yard across the street, so that way it can eat up a bunch of the brush. So I bought a 5-foot, 4.5, 5-foot dog kennel, to a big one, but one that I could move him continuously to get out there. I no more than walked across the street then one of my daughters is yelling, hey, the goat's out, and he's running down the street. Yeah, and then I went ahead. So then I went and got him back in there, and I couldn't believe we left the door open, put him back in there, jumped right back over the darn thing. I couldn't believe he cleared it. So I go, okay, I'm going to do the other system, which was I got a collar, put it on him, and I staked him in the middle. That he couldn't, that wasn't long enough, you know, that he could jump over the fence and hang himself. It kept him in the confines. And I'll be darned if he wasn't strong enough, goats are strong, that he actually pulled that dog, the thing, the auger that you twist into the ground, pulled it completely out of the ground and still jumped over the fence and was dragging that thing down the street.
So I agree. I have not gotten goats. We have not gotten any goats back across the street because I realized that I was going to have to completely fence the area in before I got my goats in.
He was lonesome.
He was. Well, he would always run out. He was running towards people. Yeah, you know, just like,
yep.
Hey, I'm going to go down here.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It'd be like putting your kid in that dog yard across. They'd be bellowing before too long.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't think my kids could have made it out of it. They're not that smart. So.
Now you're in trouble.
I know.
Yep,
I know.
You're in trouble. Oh, shoot. Oh,
I think that tells you a lot about a lot of things, though, Jackie. I think that's a good way to kind of point out that you really need to read up and talk to people before you buy animals. You know,
facilities.
That's what my father-in-law says, and my wife's really good at stopping me because, you know, we're looking at, you know, almost $4 a gallon of milk right now with the prices going up. You know, my first thing is, ooh, let's go buy a milk cow. But, you know, it's not, you just can't go throw them anywhere. And usually, you know, my wife's reason wins out after about 30 minutes. And as long as I don't come up with the idea while she's not around, you know, usually the family is safe. But, it's unbelievable how much care and how much thought really has to go into making sure they have proper facilities and that you're going to be able to maintain them. You know, like I never thought about it, but, you know, my sister-in-law pointed out that, you know, milking a cow twice a day, you're talking about, you know, anywhere from 7 to 10 gallons of milk that you're going to end up having, and you have to milk them twice a day unless they've got a calf on them. And then you're maintaining the calf. And I mean, I'm sure it's the same thing with goats, right? I mean, you have to make sure that you're maintaining them.
Yeah, you can't just skip a milking and say, well, they'll be okay. Because if you skip a milking and they don't have their babies on them, they end up with mastitis, and that can even kill them. You know, at the very least, it's going to usually end up in an infection in their udder. And sometimes it is such a strong infection, it'll kill them in a day's time. So they absolutely have to be milked twice a day. And there are people that only milk once a day, and somehow they get by, but it just gives me the willies when I hear that. We cheat. We've got a calf on the cow, and we leave the calf out and put it in another pen when we want the milk. And when we don't want to milk, we let the calf have the milk. You know, it's an older calf, so it can drink that much milk without getting sick. But that's the way we cheat, because sometimes we have to be away for like a few hours at milking time or whatever. But it is a responsibility that you have to think about before you just go out and buy a cow.
Yeah, and then let me ask you this. I mean, someone suggested the other day, and I don't know if you do this because you do have pigs, that you can all, you know, as long as you're milking them, if you can't use all that milk because you don't have time to make all the cheese, you can actually use it for your other animals. Like, I don't know if rabbits would eat it, but I know chickens, if you put milk in with your feed, they'll just eat it right up, and so will the pigs, I assume.
Yeah, everything on our homestead goes full circle or something's wrong, like the cow. She gives us lots of milk, and I do make a lot of cheese and cottage cheese and ice cream and butter and everything. But there comes a point where I have more milk than I need, and the chickens get it, the turkeys get it, the pigs get it, and we also raise bottle calves on it, our steer calves that we use for meat. So there's never too much milk on our homestead. And by feeding all these other animals the milk from the cow, it cuts their feed prices down, and they still get lots of fat and carbohydrates and protein from that milk, besides they like it a lot. And all of these animals make manure, and we put it on our fields that are our pastures. We put it on our orchard. You know, we put it on our garden. And all of the garden stuff that's extra and the orchards, fallen fruit and everything, the misshapen apples, they all go back to the animals. So it just makes a big circle all the way around.
Very cool.
That is cool. Now we only have about 10 minutes left, so I really wanted to get into this wintering for the crops now, if you can. Obviously we still have some of our fall crops that are still going to be coming in, but once that happens, what should we start doing to preparing for winter so that we have a perfect garden, so to speak, for next year?
Perfect garden is always good next year. It never seems like we make it this year, but next year we will.
Next year is going to be awesome. That's right.
That's right. Well, I'll tell you, I think two of the biggest things to think about is to pull all of your tomato vines and all of your potato vines, all of your squash vines, and put them in a row and burn those right in the garden. And the reason people say, well, put them on your compost pile. If your compost pile doesn't get thoroughly composted, and sometimes it doesn't by spring because of your cold weather, it kind of stops the composting action. And you have bits and pieces of potato and tomato vine, squash vine, not only can they harbor diseases, like blight and, wilt, but they can harbor insects that are overwintering in the vines, squash beetles, cucumber beetles, Colorado potato bugs. So you really don't want to compost those vines. We lay them in a windrow in the garden. Wait till a nice dry day when it's not windy. We don't want to cause a forest fire. And just burn those puppies right there. Any insect eggs, any spores, any viruses are all going to be burned up, and you're going to have potash left in your garden, which is a fertilizer. So
nice.
Burn those vines. Chop up anything. If you have trouble with corn earworms, burn your corn stalks or feed them to your animals. Your animals don't care if they have corn earworm eggs or little larvae in them, and they'll eat them right up and they're gone. If you compost those, chop them and compost them, you're going to end up with just as bad a problem next year. Don't leave them lay all winter in your garden at any rate. But go ahead and till up your garden, chop up all the roots so they rot over winter. Now, we sheet compost in the fall. Early in the fall, we put about 4 to 6 inches of rotted manure on the garden, and we leave it over winter to, finish rotting down and to fertilize the garden in the spring. And then so early in the spring, we till it under, and then it gets tilled again before we plant. But don't put that heavy manure where you're going to put peppers, potatoes, because the peppers will make giant pepper plants, but no peppers, and a lot of manure will cause scab in potatoes.
Okay. All right. That's good to know. Now, is there anything that you can plant in the winter?
It depends on where you live. Here, we plant good wishes. That's about it. But, if you have a more mild climate, in the fall, anywhere you plant garlic. Garlic is your fall crop. If you live in a more moderate climate, there's a lot of greens that you can plant late fall, early winter, with a simple hoop house made out of PVC pipe and plastic. In fact, there was an article in the latest Backwoods Home magazine about a fellow that had a hoop house for a raised bed, and you can see how
awesome?
He had. That was wonderful. You can raise greens pretty much all winter. It depends on your climate, of course. But
for those that are listening, it's on page 54 in the same magazine we're talking about, issue 137. It's on page 54. And what I really liked about that was the fact that he could open it so easily, open it and close it so easily. It was pretty slick setup.
That was very ingenious. Now, we've got three big hoop houses on our place, but due to our cold winter, we certainly can't keep them going in the wintertime. We use them for peppers and melons, and, oh, my God, they really, really are wonderful. So anybody that is in a cold climate, consider spending $100 and making a 12-by-16 hoop house for your peppers and melons, and it's amazing the difference it makes. If you're going to winter over any of your seed crops, your biennial seed crops like celery, rutabagas, carrots, onions, you can overwinter them in the garden, you know, just a little short row for your seed. And just throw a little mulch over it, a little 6 or 8 inches of straw when the ground finally freezes, and then pull it back in the spring, and you'll have these plants come up, and they'll go ahead and make seed, so you can save your own seed.
Wow. All right.
See, the thing about preparedness is it's okay to stockpile all this food, but if your emergency lasts longer than 6 months or a year, you've got to replenish that food somehow. So,
absolutely.
And if like onion seed is only good for 1 year, then it loses its viability. So you've got to kind of think about, okay, if I can't get any more seed, how am I going to keep making food for the family? So growing your own seed really helps a lot.
I didn't realize that onion seed only lasts a year.
Pardon me? That onion seed?
Did you say onion seed? Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it only lasts a year. Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I have to
throw the bag. Should I just throw the onion bag seed away that I've been saving?
No. Take a few seeds and put it in a damp paper towel and put it in a jar and leave it in a warm place and see if they'll sprout. Every once in a while, they'll surprise you.
Oh, man. That's good to
you know.
That's something that I would have never known.
Most seeds last for years and still are viable, but onions and parsnips are the two that just don't last.
Okay. And sorry, I'm writing this down. Parsnips. All right. And then as far as you said, lay the hay down across the top of that. Do you do that? Do you add that to all your beds, or just the ones with the like celery and stuff in it?
Okay.
For winter.
Let me clear up one thing. Don't put hay in your garden. Hay is not straw.
Straw.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, I just want to clear this up for everybody because people don't understand. Straw is the leftover stems after you thrash out your grain, your oats, your wheat, rye, barley. All it is a hollow stem. There is no food value to speak of in it. There is no seed left. And the reason, and hay is a growing green crop of grass and legumes that you cut, dry, and then bale up. And unfortunately, sometimes in those hay bales, there are weed seeds or grass seeds. And one of the worst gardens I ever had in my life was after I mulched with hay, and there was hay seed in there. It was a late cut hay, so it had gone to seed. And my beautiful garden turned into a hay field that I couldn't get rid of that grass for like 4 or 5 years. And I hacked and cut and pulled, and it was awful. So be real careful if you mulch with hay that it has absolutely no grass seed in it or any weed seed, because you can make a horrendous problem in your garden. But getting back to your question, no, I don't mulch the whole garden. I just mulch the plants that I want to overwinter to make seed for the next year. I do mulch the garlic, though. I also mulch my strawberries to give them a little winter protection with straw.
Okay, with straw. Not hay.
Not hay, no.
And then, you know, I've also heard that building these hoop houses is an easy way to extend the life, extend the growing season, I guess, for fall. Provided you don't have a really harsh winter come on early. Do you do that as well, or?
Yes, we do. It allows us to plant earlier in the spring, and it allows us to go through several freezes without damage to the plants. So when you live in a 90-day growing season climate, if you can get another month or a month and a half, 2 months on your growing season, it's unbelievable the difference it makes.
Yeah, I agree. We have never done that ourselves, but after reading that article in Backwoods Home Magazine, we're thinking about doing that. We have a bunch of raised beds, and they're all about 3 foot by 3 foot raised beds. So we'd have to build a bunch of hoop houses, but it seems like it would be an effective way to extend your growing seasons, even here in Colorado where we get so much sun.
Oh yeah. Yes, it is. I had hoop houses down in New Mexico, and I used those, even though we had a lot of sun. But I put the plastic on late in the summer and early in the spring. And, we lived at 6,000 feet, so we still had those cool mountain-type temperatures, and it slowed everything down. So adding some plastic really was a big benefit.
As far as the composting, it's also my understanding that the composting is obviously going to slow way down. If you threw plastic or like a black plastic over it, would that help keep it hot enough to burn everything?
It depends on your climate. In a cold climate, no, it won't do anything. In a warmer climate, yeah, it will. If your climate's warm enough that you can run water year-round outside, the plastic definitely would help. But if you've got snow on the ground most of the winter and it's pretty cold, it won't really help until spring comes again.
Okay. Now, how long does it take to do? I built our compost bins up. I have three different compost bins now, and I'm trying to figure out how long it's supposed to take to break this stuff down. I got a big pile in one bin, and I turn it twice a week, and I'm starting to see some changes and stuff. I've been adding the rabbit droppings to it, and all of our food scraps from in the house, and chopping down a bunch of dead plants around and stuff like that, and throwing it all in there. And so I'm getting this all mixed down, but, at what point is it going to turn to enough dirt that I can actually do something with it?
That's like saying how long is a string. It depends on how much moisture it gets. It depends on, they figure compost, a third manure, a third green, and a third brown. So your brown would be like straw, leaves, chopped up dead plants, things like that. Your green would be your lawn clippings, chopped up spent garden produce, weeds, things like that. So, and if it's all thoroughly mixed, you can figure 6 months probably. But, in that 6 months time, it depends on how hot it is. It depends on whether or not you add water, like with the hose, and wet it down periodically, or if you're getting rain. So there's a lot of some people say, oh yeah, in 8 weeks I've got wonderful black dirt. Well, yeah, well, maybe, but 6 months is I'd say that would be like a minimum.
Okay.
I'll give you in the bigger your pile, the faster it's going to decompose. In the spring, Will goes down in our pastures and he scrapes all of the manure from where we feed the hay down to the animals, and he scrapes the old dead hay, and he scrapes all of that manure into a giant, giant compost pile. And it doesn't get turned, and it doesn't get moved, but by fall, all but the very top 2 inches is this black dirt, and it's wonderful. No hay, No chunks of manure. It's just black dirt. In fact, we made our backyard out of it. He took 5 dump truck loads of that, put it on our gravel rock pile out here. We got a foot of nice black dirt on top of all that rock, and we actually have a lawn now.
Nice.
Yeah, in Colorado, okay. I started mine last, I guess, in February, and the drought has been so bad, and we don't water on the other side. We rely on rain, and so it's not nearly going as fast as people said that theirs went last year. So, I mean, it also, I think it depends, right, Jackie, on what you're throwing in the pile. Things with thicker, like branches and things like that, when you're doing your yard cuttings, are going to decompose slower than like grass and things like that.
Yeah, that's right. And it's amazing too. The moisture thing has a lot to do with, the more moist something is, the quicker it's going to rot. When we cleared off our horse pasture, it was about 8 acres of 3-inch popple trees or aspen out west, and Will bulldozed those into some great big piles, figuring he'd burn them. Well, we burned some of them. Some of them didn't want to burn, and we just left them. But, you know, in a year's time, because we get quite a bit of rain here, there's dirt mixed in with them, and so they rotted really well. And he went to push them all into another pile, and as he's pushing, all this black dirt comes out, and there was hardly any wood in the piles left at all. And those were like 2-3-inch popple trees.
Wow.
Wow, that's
really
pretty impressive.
We thought it was. We're just like, wow,
yeah.
Look at that. Giant compost piles.
Yeah. All right, well, we're at the end, Jackie, so we're going to go ahead. But I have one last question for you. I'm going to be going up to Canada in a little over a month and going up there to hunt bear. And I'm going right through your area to get up to Ontario. If I get a bear, do you have any good bear recipes I can swing by and we can try when I get this fresh bear meat?
Oh, yeah. There you go. Sure. We'll make bear sausage or something. Yeah, that sounds good.
I've never cooked up bear, so I figure if I'm gonna have bear meat, I might as well go to the expert and see what we can figure out what to do with it.
Bear tastes like a combination of pork and beef. It's really actually very good.
Is it really? You've had it?
Oh yeah, yeah.
I'm very excited.
They look horrible when you skin them, though. They look like a big fat man hanging in a tree. It's kind of gruesome.
All right. Well, I won't look. That's kind of depressing, but we'll just hope for the taste.
I know a bear roast with onions and carrots and potatoes looks a lot nicer than that bear hanging in a tree, though.
All right. Well, thank you, Jackie, for being on the show. I'm sure we'll talk to you again here in the next couple of weeks. And thank you for all the advice, as always.
Well, it's always fun to talk to you guys.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you real soon. All right, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we'll wrap up this show and get started on our weekend. So we'll talk to you after 3 commercials.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor. Looking for power grid independence? The Humless Solar Kit is the answer. Increasing brownouts in the U.S. suggest it's time to get a backup. The problem is gas generators are messy, require maintenance, and oh, gas, which may be scarce in a real emergency. Get the Humless Solar Kit by itself or with a 1,000-watt Humless Sentinel generator. The kit includes a 100-watt solar panel, 20-foot extension cord, LED floodlight, rechargeable flashlights, and more. Become a fan at Humless.com or on Facebook.
I'm Dr. Prepper, and I'm here today to tell you about the Wonder Mill. Their patented grain mills create the most luxurious and quality flours from any hard grains or beans. They contract with the world's best-suited factories to manufacture the Wonder Mill to the highest specification in the industry that they plan and design right up there in Pocatello, Idaho. They are the only American company with both electric and hand-operated models. I liked them so much, I bought both, and you should too. I use the electric model for the finest flour, and I use the hand-operated model for making my grits and creamy wheat for breakfast. And I can have it fresh every day. With the Wonder Mill's lifetime warranty and the fact that these are simply the world's fastest, quietest, cleanest operating grain mills, it's no wonder that most preparedness and kitchen professionals prefer the Wonder Mill over all the other grain mills on the market. I love both mine. I know you'll love yours too. Go to thewondermill.com. That's thewondermill.com and Wonder Mill Grain Grinders. Get yours today. Tell them that Dr. Prepper sent you, will you?
Discover the taste of the sun. Thousands of preppers have acquired a sun oven to have on hand in the event of an emergency and have been pleasantly surprised by the improved taste of sun-cooked foods. Sun ovens are a preparedness item you can start using today. A sun oven will pay for itself by reducing your utility bills and by keeping your house cooler in the summer. Food can be baked, boiled, or steamed at temperatures of 360 to 400 degrees Fahrenheit with the power of the sun. Sun ovens are often confused with homemade solar cookers, but they get considerably hotter, cook food faster, and hold temperatures longer. Sun ovens fold up in seconds, carry like a suitcase, and have many innovative features which make them the ultimate solar appliance. For the past 25 years, sun ovens have been proudly made in the U.S. They are durable and have a long life and come with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. For a discount coupon, email preppers at sunoven.com. That's preppers at sunoven.com.
Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed with Colorado Ron and Bubba DaVinci. We were just talking to Jackie Clay, and she's completely turned me off of bear hunting now. So I was just calling to cancel my trip. It was like, you know, okay, looks like a big fat man hanging in the tree. And I'm like, okay, I resemble that comment. So
oh,
what
my
a
goodness.
Joy kill. I'm telling you, I love the lady, but there you go. just what I want to think about. No, I'm just kidding.
So where are you going?
When or where?
Where?
Ontario. Ontario. I think I told you, I'm going to hunt with a group called Wolfs, W-O-L-F-E-S, Creek Guide. It's up in Wolfs Creek, Ontario. Actually, I can never say the name of the town. It's like Opsatitsky or something like that. O-P-A-S-A-T-I-K-A, Ontario. I don't remember how long from here. It's quite a ways. Anyway, I'm driving up there, and the guys are really, really nice, and I'm actually going up there for a combo hunt. I'll be hunting both bear and wolf with a bow, and it's a really good hunting place, and they've had North American Safaris, the Bear Whisperer, the Hitman. And Smackdown Nation, these are all really big hunting TV shows. They've all gone up there. And as a matter of fact, my buddies up there at the place that runs the place just sent me a picture of the hitmen who were there this weekend, and they brought down a 400-pound bear this weekend. Beautiful, beautiful bear, just gorgeous. And they've hit they've had like three or four Pope and Young bears this year. So that's free range with free range archery. And just massive, massive beasts. So I'm looking forward. It's North America big game. It's one that I've always wanted to do, but I've always said that I wouldn't hunt, I didn't want to hunt something that I couldn't eat or do something with. And so, when I had this opportunity come up, it was like, ooh, I've got to figure out. I've always wanted to try bear meat, and so I'm going to make sure. But let me tell you, that was just such a weird comment to hear. It's like, okay, well,
you know, they look like a fat man hanging in a tree when you're skinning them. And I'm just kind of like, okay, that's an interesting way.
Yeah. You're like, oh, great. You know, does it taste good? Oh, I want to make some sausage. Yeah, it kind of looks like a fat man hanging in a tree. That was great.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
But the ham tastes good. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's the visual just kind of completely turned me off of what I thought the flavor was going to be like. So that may be true, Jackie, but no. But anyway, I think I'm going to go down this weekend and, I don't want to take my farm fresh eggs and sit them out there for 4 to 6 weeks so they're easier to peel. So I think what I'm going to end up doing is going down and picking up, you know, 4 or 5, maybe 6 dozen of the Walmart eggs and try pickling those this week.
Okay. Yeah.
I love eggs.
I agree. I mean, I was looking through her recipes on pickling, and there's actually a bunch that I'd like to do. And so, you know, one of our favorites is actually pickled onions. You know, you get those little pearl onions, you know, bite-sized mm-hmm. little onions, and pickle those. Oh, they're so good.
I like just about anything.
Yeah. Yep. Same here. But I love eggs. I love the pickled eggs. And what was those ones you sent me? Was that quail eggs?
Yeah, that's why when you got the quail, I was. Yeah, I'm still interested to see how many eggs you'll be getting. Yeah, those are pickled quail eggs.
Yeah,
a friend of ours in Texas. Yeah, but he won't share his pickling recipe. I mean, he does that. His pickling recipe is like out of this world. I love his pickled quail eggs. I mean, and I know Jackie. Yeah, you know, she teaches a class I think twice a year at her home, and one of the things, and I unfortunately we had done a show the weekend before her class this last time. And I was going to go up, and it was just so close. I couldn't do the drive all the way back from Colorado Springs and then turn around and jump in the car and get back up there. It was just too much with everything we had going on. So I missed it. But one of the things she tells everybody is she's got her own little pickling recipe to keep things crisp and everything else, and she only shares it at the classes. I want to get up there with the pickling secret. But, I mean, she gave us some good tips today, and we'll have to give that a try. I've had so many friends that, you know, pickle things and they're good for about 6 months to a year. But any more than that, you go down there and everything is mush. You know, the eggs have started to disintegrate and they're soft in the center. And I don't like it soggy. That's the thing I like about those quail eggs is his recipe, whatever he puts in it, the centers don't get super soft. And so I'll pull them out 2 years later and still do it in there. And the yolks or the center's still hard, which makes for a good quail egg.
Man, they're good. If you have not had pickled quail eggs, people, you're missing out.
I'll tell you what I told my wife this last night. I drove overnight, and what I did was I stopped by and picked up a huge jar of pickled quail eggs. And then there's other place. Oh, yeah. And then there's this other place that I know that they make fresh beef sticks every day. And so I bought a dozen venison sticks with cheese and jalapenos diced up in the middle, and then giant jar of quail eggs. And I felt so bad for that cat being – forget the cat smelling up my car. I felt so bad for the cat being trapped in that vehicle because the only thing I ate in the 15-hour drive – was a giant jar of pickled quail eggs, jalapeno quail eggs, and a dozen venison and beef mix, but a dozen beef sticks with jalapenos and cheese. So, let me tell you, that was healthy eating.
And the cat survived, huh?
the cat survived. That's exactly it. I mean, you know, you get that stuff so rarely.
Yeah, I don't get down there very often anymore. I mean, we were just down there, and I should have bought some when I drove back, but I didn't have time to do the side trip. And when I got over there, it was like a quart-sized jar, maybe larger than a quart, just this really big jar. Must have had, 24 to 36 quail eggs in it, packed in jalapeno pickling sauce, and then a dozen sticks. And every time I stuck my hand in there and pulled them out, because I didn't worry about my hand getting inside there because I knew no one was going to get any by the time I got home. It was going to be completely empty. And it was. Let me tell you, that was just, it was a bad idea all the way around.
It sounds like our trip through the South.
That's right. And I was thinking about that. You know, the original idea when I first bought them was for my drive down to North Carolina. And I didn't even get 20 minutes outside of where I picked them up before I cracked open that stupid jar and started, you know, pounding those tail eggs. And I was like, should have bought two jars. But if I had bought two jars, I would have eaten two jars because that's how much I like them. It would have been completely ridiculous. Yeah, but that's all right. That's all right. There's good food between here and North Carolina, and I'm looking forward to that.
That's right. I'm already planning it out.
Planning out your food stop.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh, I'm stopping here. I'm stopping here. And here.
and I wanted to let you know, just for you, Colorado Ron, I stopped at Steak and Shake before I left the state of Texas and had the spaghetti? I stopped and had officially for I've never had it before, but officially Colorado Ron gets this every single time. I officially had a five-way chili and a big shake, you know, because Colorado Ron loves Steak and Shake. And so when I was passing and I was just about ready to enter Oklahoma, and I saw Steak and Shake, and I said, you know, before I leave the state of Texas, I better stop and, you know, give tribute to Colorado Ron before I head out of the state. And even after that, I still continue to eat quail eggs and sausage sticks. Oh, yeah. I mean, you can't beat Steak and Shake. I mean, Colorado Ron introduced me to it on our trip to the South when we were going to set up the North Carolina trip. I had never been to one before. And we found one in Tennessee or someplace. And, man, let me tell you, I was like, holy, I could not believe I've never been to this place before. I mean, these shakes are massive and they're good. Still haven't done a breakfast there, but I'll have to because they have this massive stack of all
you can eat for like $3 or something, isn't it? It's like all you can eat for like $3.99 or something ridiculous. All you can eat pancakes.
Yeah. It's you know, overall, I've decided the place is just wrong. You know, you shouldn't get that much food. Yeah, for the prices they charge, because it's just contributing to my, you know, to the, you know, my having to buy bigger pants every single time I do a trip. So
you probably need to replace the interior on that Suburban now.
Yeah, I know. It's raining outside, but I have the windows down to air it out, so it should be fine. All right. It's about time to wrap it up. Let's go ahead and go down our list of things that we have to make sure we do. So you can check us out on backwoodshomemagazine.com, www.backwoodshomemagazine.com. And by the way, we do have our new edition out, Backwoods Home Magazine's September-October 2012 edition, number 137, is out. $5.95 at just about any stand, or you can go online and order a subscription. This is a rockin' magazine. Everybody that we've talked to that's ever seen it. Jackie Clay's got two articles in it. Doc Bones and Nurse Amy have a article on closing wounds in a remote setting inside here. I love this issue because we've got just a little bit about everything. Potatoes, do-it-yourself hoop houses, easy-made dairy products, pickling, you name it, it's in here. Great magazine to make sure you have for your Self-Reliance bookshelf. As always, Self-Reliance Expo will be September 14th and 15th in Hickory, North Carolina. Colorado Ron's really gearing up for that. And that is, you can check the information out on there, www.selfrelianceexpo.com. And we'll have the schedule up on Monday. I believe, correct? As soon as you get done talking to our secret guest, if
yep.
everything's done. All right.
That's correct.
And then, all right, and then you can check out all the different things that we've got going on our Facebook pages, Backwoods Home Mag, in order to check out what's going on with Backwoods Home Magazine. Preparedness Radio also has stuff that's going on inside there. Self-Reliance Expo should give you all the updates of what's going on with the expo information. And Colorado Ron, you're posting to your new one, which is Colorado Ron page, correct?
Yep. Yep. Facebook.com / Colorado Ron page.
Yeah, Colorado. Actually, if you just go to Facebook and in the search you type in Colorado Ron page, it pulls up. But yeah, that gives you what it
yep.
is. And then all Bubba Da Vinci will pull up the Bubba Da Vinci stuff. So I think that's it. I've got a hog roast to go to. What are you doing this afternoon?
All the whole family is getting together and going to the lake for a barbecue, actually. So
oh,
I'm
nice.
Excited. We haven't relaxed on a Saturday. You know, we've been doing so many projects around the house. We haven't really relaxed on a Saturday, so I'm excited.
Oh, and our producer Steve mentioned earlier, but we forgot to talk about it. We're at 1.5
yes.
downloads so far.
1.5
so, I mean, we
million.
I mean, we just announced a million. It seemed like 3 months ago. So that's pretty
yeah.
pretty good that we're up at a 1.5 million in such a short time span. So. Awesome to and congratulations to everybody on our radio network for hitting the 1.5 million. Let's just keep it rolling. And I guess that's it. So from Bubba Da Vinci and Colorado Ron and our producer, Steve, you all have a great weekend.
Take care.
You've been listening to BHM Radio, the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine on the Preparedness Radio Network. Tune in every other week at this time to get more information on the articles you love. Questions or comments for the hosts? Email them at coloradoron@gmail.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
If everything you eat comes out of boxes stored in your freezer, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo. If you're afraid to take out your own garbage because the neighbor kids might beat you up, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo.
Over 50 free training classes are coming to the Self-Reliance Expo at the Hickory Convention Center Friday, September 14th and Saturday, September 15th. Gardening, alternative home building, off-grid living, food preservation, cooking with the sun, self-defense classes, canine demos, and more.
If you can kill a houseplant just by looking at it, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo.
This event is fun for the whole family and is the largest of its kind in the nation. Learn how to do it yourself. Learn how to defend yourself. Save money, save a life.
If the only screwdriver you own is made of orange juice and vodka, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo.
It's the Self-Reliance Expo at the Hickory Convention Center, Friday, September 14th and Saturday, September 15th. Go to selfrelianceexpo.com for information and tickets.
You've been listening to the Preparedness Radio Network, offering helpful and timely tips on preparing for natural and man-made disasters. Timely and useful tips on gardening and homesteading. Check us out online at BePreparedRadio.com. Until next time, remember,
Preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.